Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to FaithFest, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people, must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio / Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is August 10th, 2022. My name is Robin Austin, and I'm with my co-host, Luann Fleming.
Hello, everybody.
Hillary Hogue is with us tonight.
I am here, thankful for another radio show concerning guardianship and solutions to end the madness.
Great.
Thank you.
Welcome. And Marcy Friedman is taking the night off.
Right.
We have a full radio show tonight. So please try not to talk over anyone. If that happens, we will call out your names to speak. All of our radio shows are recorded and archived. You can find those archives at blogtalkradio.com/hiddentruthrevealed. We will be taking in calls from our listeners in about 45 minutes or so. And to do that, you will call 845-241-9962. Press a 1 to let us know that you have a question or a comment.
Right. So, Hillary, do you have anything you want to talk about real quickly before we get into our show tonight?
Of course I do. You know, this week and last week, it's been like every other week, maybe a little bit more, with victims throughout the state, you know, calling, asking for help. I'm not an attorney. I'm a single mother with two young children who was lucky enough somehow to have my dad back home with me. But the problem in all of these cases is basically, besides everything, is one, attorneys. We have no attorneys, and if we do, they're overloaded, and they can't take any new cases. Or other attorneys just don't want to get involved with it, or they are corrupt. And it's, you know, it's something we're begging anyone who's listening who has an attorney that's honest, that can practice in Florida, or whichever state, to please, we're begging you, get involved with guardianship law and probate, because you will be doing a service to the elderly and the disabled community, and it is the right fight to fight as an attorney, because what is worse than losing all of your rights besides death? I don't know, but it's been a tough week, but we are here, you and I, our guests and listeners, and we will do whatever we can to end the corruption that we see in guardianship courts throughout this country. So thank you for letting me be a part of this show again.
Absolutely. Always
absolutely.
Happy to. We have a mutual admiration society here.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We always appreciate you.
Thank you.
Right. Our show is going to last an hour and a half tonight, and we are going to be talking about what's going on in Colorado, and I know this is happening in other states as well. We're talking about the recent Judicial Discipline Interim Committee proceedings in Colorado, and this has been going on for a couple months now. There was a legislation going on that we needed judicial discipline, and we've actually been joining in on the public comments as we are just live on Zoom with this committee. And Rob and I did a speech. We also had Debbie Carroll was on there, and a couple of people from our organization was on there to talk about what we saw in our court. So that was really interesting, and they all decided that, yes, they understand what's going on, and they're trying to fix the judicial discipline system, which is astonishing about how they're finally listening because of all the stuff that's been in the newspaper. We are going to be talking about that tonight, And we've also got a very special guest with us that's also going to be talking with us. He has a lot of knowledge and a lot of things we're going to be talking about. So let me tell you a little bit about the show, and then I'm going to bring Robin on, and he can comment on whatever we want to talk about. So anyway, the show tonight is our recent Judicial Discipline Interim Committee proceedings here in Colorado. And our guest tonight is Marty Powers. He's also from Colorado. He has 6 years of probate fraud experience. Knowledge is power. What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about what is the importance of continuous movement. If one is good, is three times better. How media must be involved. Keep public officials informed of problems and legislative bills. Stop talking, take action. 820 rule. What is that? We're going to learn about this. Learn the rules between the police, the sheriff, and the clerk. Build the advocate program that will take on court corruption and fraud, just like we've done here at Faces Radio and across the country. Then also, is the Attorney Regulation Council committed to protecting the public or the system? We're going to talk about that tonight. And also understand why your lawyer may not have your best interest, like we found out that we've had many lawyers on the show that have been wonderful lawyers. And they've come on to us and talked about how they were removed by unethical lawyers. So they are also facing a lot of issues in our courtrooms as well. And they're also being retaliated on by some of the judges as we were listening to this interim today, what was going on. So we have a lot to talk about, and our guest, Marty Powers. And would you have anything to say, Robin?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it was an interesting day, and it's been many interesting days. In Colorado, there was a scandal in the judiciary department. The judicial department, apparently at the highest levels, a newspaper story that was brought forward about a promotion that happened for a particular employee, and the newspaper story alleged that there was that this was kind of a quid pro quo of some kind, where this employee had the goods on some of the judges in the higher part of the Supreme Court, where the judiciary had been acting in ways that showed a lack of decorum and a lack of professionalism, and this individual was threatening to bring forth a sexual harassment lawsuit that would detail many of the events that had led to her position. Well, she was fired, and then they offered her this big contract, and then they, because there have been so many shifts in the story.
So many.
But the offshoot of it was that it brought this to the public eye, and what has happened since is the legislature said, you know what, we don't really want to have our judiciary with a big black mark saying they're corrupt, or they're you know, in bad shape, or they're guilty of these kind of offenses. So we need to do something about this. Let's talk about this. Let's see what we can do as the legislature. And so they've begun the process of examining what's going on to do something about judicial discipline, since it appears to this observer and many others that the judiciary in Colorado just does not seem to have much capability of meaningfully disciplining themselves. And we saw this when we had judges that were behaving in completely unethical ways without an absolute law for the Constitution, for the rules that they pledge to uphold when they take their oath to become a judge, for the rules of professional conduct of attorneys. All those things went right out the window. They just stomp all over that in some of the courts. And because we saw this, this is actually what started FACES, Families Against Court Embezzlement on Ethical Standards, which was the foundation for this radio show that we founded so many years ago. So all of these things have come to the point in Colorado where it has become really... The judiciary does have a big black eye, and it doesn't help when Representative Pete Lee, who was heading up the committee, what is the name of the committee?
Discipline Interim Committee.
Judicial Discipline Interim Committee that's exploring these issues, was headed up by Representative Pete Lee until earlier today or yesterday.
Yesterday.
It came out that Representative Pete Lee had apparently, it is alleged, lied about where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was
indicted
for that, and that's a felony indictment. And now, so he went and asked to be removed from the committees that he was on in the legislature, which was prudent, I guess, since he's under indictment. And so he was removed from his position heading up the committee that was doing this investigation. So here you have an investigation into what are the ethics of judges and how can we hold them to a higher professional standard that's being headed up by a person who's obviously, it appears, made some ethical compromises in his own life.
I don't know what's going on with that, but
here in Colorado, the whole pot is really cooking. It's quite a stew that's going on.
Right.
So this is the kind of thing that we're seeing, and it's quite the story. It's quite
right.
Interesting
and
to be in the midst of it and to be going in front of these people. I remember when we actually talked to Pete Lee one time, and we laid out our case. We said we've got hundreds of cases. We've got all these people that have these problems with probate courts. And he looked us in the eye and said, "Oh, you people, it's just a bunch of you're just a bunch
of bad
cases
losers.
who are unhappy with the way that your cases came out. You didn't like the ruling of the judges, and so here you are making a big thing out of it." And it made us so angry.
Over and over again, we were in front of Senator Pete Lee. Over and over till 5 in the morning. We've done so many legislation bills in front of him, and every one of them, even I'm telling you, even my own councilman right here in my own district, Mike Weisman, I'm telling you right now, we've been in front of him in front of town hall meetings. We've been in front of him, Bob Gardner, Senator Bob Gardner. We've been in front of every one of these people on this committee 7 straight years. Not one of them ever voted for our bill for judicial district. Not one.
We've been telling them. Now, however, let's give credit
where
credit is due.
But we're going to give credit.
It appears that finally,
maybe,
perhaps, possibly, they're listening, and we may be on the verge of some actual action that really makes meaningful change. I would love to believe it. I would love to believe that. But I'll have to see some reality before I buy into the lip service that they've been paying us all these
years. We do have a guest with us tonight. His name is Marty Powers, and he's I call him the knowledge power, and maybe because he has so much fun on here in Colorado. He's also been a victim of 6 years of probate courts. That's Marty Powers, our radio show. Marty? Hold on, Marty. I think I just I let you go.
Marty Powers, are you there?
Hi,
Marty.
Could you hear me?
Hi.
Right, great.
Welcome.
Hi, Marty.
Thank you. Morning. Hey, or evening. Thank you for having me back. It's a pleasure. And I just want to put a shout out to this group of faces and much of the progress that has been made in the legislation and much of the progress that we listened to on the Wednesday evenings and we're making in our respective courtrooms. Is a direct result of this program and the constant push to excel and help others that are going through this process. And so what I thought would be helpful is to kind of explain how I've struggled through my particular torture chamber by the Colorado courts. And if that's helpful for the group, that's great. And then describe some of the things that I'm moving forward on as a result of all this fraud and corruption in the courts so that we truly represent the people that are being affected. And we have a very small group of privileged and corrupt individuals that believe that when your family has built a fortune or even depending on doesn't have to be a lot of money, but whatever the amount is they look at it as it's their money. and that if there's anything left over, then maybe they'll give it to you. And a couple of the comments that I think should ring in everyone's ears that were expressed a little bit earlier in this conversation was the things that you'll hear from the courts and the administrators is that we're just a bunch of disgruntled individuals that aren't happy with our case. And that's the furthest from the truth. We are not disgruntled individuals. We are a group of individuals that have been screwed over by the system, by a corrupt judicial branch, a corrupt elder law community, and corrupt administrators who are required by statute and by code and by law to administer the proceedings equitably and in a fair manner. And it couldn't be further from the truth that this system that's in place in many of the judicial branches and the communities around the United States is just it's a free-for-all of theft by these individuals. And so this is not going to be fixed overnight, but it will take an army of effort to make small steps. And then with these small steps, we get noticed. And we can take the next larger steps, but let me kind of go through a couple of the things that I've learned as a result of my particular probate case. And to give you an example of where I'm coming from is I've been in probate for 6 years. My father died Valentine's Day of 2016, and we are in probate. The entire probate case has been resolved. We are in a cash position at this point for over a year to a year and a half, and the court has dragged its feet on responding to additional fees at the PR. We've had three PRs. The first PR wants to be paid in another $150,000 plus additional cost for the last 2 years of trying to recover her costs. When this PR has perjured herself multiple times in court, and the list goes on and on and on of the fraudulent activities, theft of over $120,000 in securities, but the system rewards her, and we've gone through and waited 14 months for the court to come up with a verdict saying that. No, doesn't matter what the personal representative does, doesn't matter the fraud, doesn't matter the lying in court, doesn't matter that's not a breach of fiduciary duties. And so we are going against a massive system of corruption. But, and I guess absolutely. Some people would stop. I'm sorry?
I just wanted to second that. No, absolutely true. What you're saying, the court, it is an organized crime syndicate that is well organized, well funded, and efficiently run. And it is organized crime. There's no two ways about it. There's not another view that might be considered. It really is, as you describe it. We're not disgruntled individuals. Right. Because things didn't go our way. We're crime victims who are in a position where the powers that be are using the power that is really power that should be for the people, of, by, and for the people. This is America. This is one of the branches of our government. This should be under our supervision. The courts are our court, but they're misusing and abusing the power that has been vouchsafed to them. And so I just wanted to second what you're saying, but please go ahead.
Bye. Well said. I appreciate that. That is very well said. So I've been in this for 6 years. I've had three attorneys. In my particular probate case, we have over 70 attorneys and administrators. My father was worth around $300,000 cash at the time of his death, and he had about $4 million in property, of which was previously subdivided through the LLCs that we had to my two sisters and I of 50%. So he had about $2.3 million to his name in his personal name when he died. At this point, we've spent approximately $3 million in legal fees. And the personal representative has basically cost me personally through identity theft of over $4 million in my personal losses. And so they use the system against you. And I can tell you that every one of the 40 attorneys, there's been three attorney generals that have been on my case and approximately 37 other attorneys. That is absolute insanity. And basically what, and we've had 8 or 9 judges. And the reason why they do this is an important indicator of what's going on in your particular case, is if you have the rotation of judges in and out and you have rotation of attorneys in and out, what they are doing is they are resetting the clock every time a new judge or new lawyer comes in. And it becomes very difficult to hold anyone accountable because there are stop gaps and restarts, and then information's lost, information's not transferred. It's an intentional process of deception. And so if your particular case, you see judges being swapped out, you see they're not billing you. In my particular case, our first bill didn't come till a year and a half after. Our inventory was never completed, though it's a statute requirement. So if you see activities like accounting that's a year and a half before your first accounting, you're in a bad situation. If you don't have an inventory per the, I think it's 60 days or 90 days, you have a problem, and the system is probably working against you. So in my three lawyers, each one of my lawyers was working against me, and it was part of the system. And the system protects the kingmaker, if you will. And the kingmaker could be the personal representative that delegates all of her his or her authority and contracts to escalate legal fees, escalate selling a property, escalate costs of selling securities. Everyone gets to eat at the table except for the heirs, who it's their family money. So those are some of the things that you want to kind of be aware of if you see rotation of individuals, or you see a significant amount of individuals on your particular case, got a problem.
Right.
So
they're hiding things by churning through and obfuscating by creating barriers that are difficult to surmount, and it becomes impossible to go back and say, hey, wait a minute, there was cheating and lying and stealing going on, because then it's like, well, we don't have access to that information. We can't get that. Oh, we don't know that. That attorney's no longer involved. That attorney's no longer involved. Well, that was that judge. This is courtroom now, and I'm the one who's the boss. And then the next day, oh, no, that judge is gone. I'm the new judge. I have nothing to do with what they did.
Yeah, and you know
right.
what? It kind of reminds me, Marty, when we were doing protest signs, one of them says, give family trust to family heirs, not court officials. It's not theirs. So when you're talking about the only ones that are profiting in all this are not the heirs for sure. It is the court-appointed attorneys
right.
that are profiting.
They divide the whole estate up among court officials and appointed court actors, and it's organized crime. It's theft. It's robbery.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it's important that you be aware, and I'm just going to put it out there. You have to be careful of your particular jurisdictions and states you live in, but your conversations with your attorneys, they should be recorded. And the attorney has to notify you if they are going to record a conversation by statute. But if you can record as a single person, I would record the conversations with your attorneys. And in the upcoming months and stuff, it's one of my goals is to develop worksheets or templates that you can go into your meetings with your attorney and ask them questions, specific questions on what they're doing to see if you are in the middle of a bad situation. But that's, you know, being part of this FACES group, it's one of the things that I've committed to in helping and wanting to assist wherever I can, because the unfortunate thing is that we are a bunch of islands right now, and that we are all fighting one-on-one against the system. And gradually we need to merge our resources together so that we can accumulate a little bit more inertia and go after these people with some force. Because once we break down the initial walls, it will be just, they'll be hemorrhaging. And the corruption, you know, will be so deep and so various that who knows how long it will take to fix. But someone's got to break the wall. Someone's got to break through. And that's what I am, hopefully, part of this team in helping. So,
well, you
know,
you are definitely part of this team. I mean, you've been in front of legislators with us. We have talked several times, and I believe we are all of us are on the same page. Our team out here in Colorado has grown so much in the last 5 to 7 years. I can't even tell you how many families we have now involved.
The thing is, too, that you make a significant contribution to what have been our goals for a long time. You're right. We're a bunch of islands. And by bending together and working, we become more of a continent.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And by doing that, then we have this larger body that is a well-organized front. And the thing about it here, there's something that was coming to my own mind. There's this book called Power versus Force. And in that book, one of the things that the book is based on is muscle testing, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, muscle testing. You can, and a person will stand and put their right arm out to the side or
kind
the
of
left
what you're
arm.
Doing with the judicial
and then
system.
You just take two fingers and you can, if you put two fingers on the wrist, you can push that arm down without a great deal of strain because of the leverage that you have. Now, if that person were to say something truthful to you while you push down on their arm, they're resisting as best they can. If they say something truthful while you're pushing down on that arm, they test stronger. They lie to you while you're pushing down on that arm, they test weaker. So in a human being, the truth is not only stranger than fiction, truth is stronger than falsehood.
Right.
So when we stand up for what is truth, what is just, what is right, we stand in greater strength than those who stand on their lies and their falsehood. And that means that by coming at people with that kind of integrity of we're standing up for the truth, we're standing up for the right, we're standing up for the just, we are more powerful automatically. And by organizing that in a way that we can stand up to the organized crime syndicates that come against us, we'll develop a tremendous amount of strength in a short period of time.
Right.
Luana is trying to point something out to me.
And the thing we wanted to talk about to you tonight, Marty, is what is the importance of continuous movement? I mean, is that exactly what we're talking about tonight?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's that every week you should be, depending on what your status is in your particular cases, if you're in the beginning, middle, or if you're towards the end and you're out of money and you're pro se and the system's against you, is that you need the importance of continuous movement is always addressing one or two issues a week. And whether if you don't understand what's going on in the legal process, do your research on what your attorneys are doing. If you're doing pro se and doing it on your own, make sure you get something done every week, because time is what they depend on to wear you out. And so you have to stay focused and you have to get things done every week. And that's what I mean by continuous movement is like a shark in the water. You know, they stop moving, they die. And you have to continue to move and continue to make motions so that you are, you know, piling up issues that they ultimately have to address. And so the and I'll get to onto my third point, but the correlation to this is my 80-20 rule about stop talking and taking action. And we all have a story, and they're brutal, and some are worse than others. But we all have a story, and we all get, you know, have a feeling of therapeutic results when we talk about our issues and we talk about how badly we're getting screwed and how bad the system is. And I understand, and I believe it is therapeutic to talk about it. But you must, going back to the continuous movement action, is try, if you're going to spend 10 hours on your probate case a week or whatever you're doing, spend 80 of it on taking action, understanding what your attorney is doing, looking up the statutes, understanding it, you know, the best you can as a layman. Or if you're a pro se, is taking action 80% of the time and then talking about 20% of the time. You know, the talking about it 20% of the time, while you're not rehashing that issue with your coworkers or this or that, sometimes just by talking about your case, you run into people that can help and or can point you in a direction. So you still can talk about it, but be effective. Don't keep repeating your story over and over to the same people. If you're going to talk about it with new people that might be able to help. But focus 80% of your time on taking action and getting something done or getting smarter about the case or doing something that helps you. Because the more we talk about it, you know, if we split and talk about it 80% of the time, they're going to run us over. And so that's what I mean by that. And then the other aspect is, you know, if one is good, it's three times better. Well, so we've all been to the police stations. We've all been to the various administrative offices, and we've filed our police reports, and nothing happens. We've gone to the FBI. Nothing happens. Well, I can tell you that I went to the Attorney Regulatory Council 14 times in 2018 and 2019. And you know what happened? Absolutely nothing. But a crazy thing happened 3 years later in 2022. I didn't realize it at the time, but my sister's attorney, who my sister got a contempt order against her in 2017, and for those who are not familiar with the contempt, a contempt order by the court was the court ordering my sister and all the people in the court to turn over documents. Well, my sister's attorney, Allison Zinn, at the time, and who represented her during the contempt hearing, I found out 3 or 4 years later that she sits on the Attorney Regulatory Council. So she sits on the board that disciplines attorneys for contempt and can disbar attorneys and can sanction attorneys. And she's the one doing the contempt. She's the one we found out not turning over documents. And so this was by luck. It was not intentional. But I also grieved Miss Allison Zinn. I didn't realize she was on the Attorney Regulatory Council, but I grieved her as part of the process in 18 and 19. So,
and that means
looking back,
filed a grievance with the court, is that right?
Yes, I filed a grievance with the attorney with the Attorney Regulatory Council. And so What that means, is, to put this in perspective, is we all go to work, and let's just say the vice president of the company got brought up on a sexual harassment charge. Well, do you think the questioning of a vice president of details would be a little bit more maybe intense than if someone in the mailroom was stealing envelopes and stuff of that nature? Of course it would be. Well, so we have Allison Zinn, who's an attorney of record, on a contempt issue of which she was found guilty of and was supposed to turn over documents, doesn't turn over documents on multiple requests, is grieved twice, which means that the Attorney Regulatory Council knew everything about it all the way back to 2016 when she was starting as the attorney for my sister. She knew for 6 years and concealed the documents for 6 years that would have ended my probate case in 2017, the case that still goes on today. So what I'm telling you is any attorney, so if you want a talking point and you are for a probate case that you're in Colorado, and you know any attorney or you know any malpractice attorney that that wants an edge with their client, or their client has been prosecuted or disbarred or sanctioned, well, they should contact Luann or me with FACES, and we'll give them, I'll give them my complaint history and the 14 cases and show you how corrupt the Attorney Regulatory Council is, and they'll have a great response. And for that matter, if you ever file a grievance against the Attorney Regulatory Council, I'd be happy to give you my documents on the on the corruption that I found with the Attorney Regulatory Council. So, but getting back to my why, if three is three times better, you don't know. But what I can tell you is that you get better each time you file that report. And then in my cases, maybe you talk to the police first. Well, the police say, oh, that's a sheriff issue, or that's a court issue, clerk issue. They'll help you. And then you get better, and then you file reports. And I can tell you, in some cases, your insurance might kick in if you have umbrella insurance. So one of the things I tell people is get umbrella insurance. If you are about to go into a probate case, get umbrella insurance, because in some cases, the malicious prosecution or defamation or anything of that nature can be covered by insurance. And it's going to happen. So, again, those tips. But is three better? I would say yes. And it's because you don't know 2 years, 3 years down the road, if you're still in probate and you filed 5, 6, 7, 10 reports, and then you unearthed something like I did 5 years later, it's very, very powerful. And it shows the corruption at a much greater scale. So don't be deterred. If your first police report doesn't get an action, keep filing them. And then, you know, make complaints if the officer doesn't follow up on it or this or that. But keep filing reports.
You know, Marty, I would like to just circle back around a little bit to
sure.
Is the importance of continuous movement. And the reason I want to come back to that is because from what I've learned in this odyssey of making this journey is that that when you file something with a court, what the judge is looking for is for you to file something that will move the court. In other words, you say to the judge that here's the law, here's the circumstances, therefore you should move this way. And the judge will say, so moved, and then you have a court order. So the importance of continuous movement has a dual meaning in this situation. Not only do you need to continue on your own legal development in the journey of dealing with whatever your circumstances are, concerned about and thinking about what it is, what movement you expect and hope for and desire from the court, and what angle is it going to take, and what direction can you approach, and what facet of the jewel is going to reflect in that judge's eyes in the way that will cause them to move in your favor. And that's what you're looking for, is the particular set of statutes, the particular set of precedents, and the circumstances that match those statutes and precedents in a way that you can then use that as a basis to say, and so this court must, according to the statutes and precedents, move this way in this particular case. And that is a way that you can move the court. If you're continuously in the process of movement and you're thinking in those terms as well, then what you're doing is continually putting pressure on that judge to do their job according to the rules that they are compelled to follow, according to the rules of court, which have all these rules. That's what it's all about, rules and statutes. So I just wanted to circle back to that because that was sort of on my mind.
There you go.
No, absolutely. That's a great point. And so the other thing to think about with respect to that and the keeping things moving is the fact that in the beginning of most court cases and that the attorneys are going to ask for extensions, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Get real clear with your attorney that you do not want to do that because all that does is double and triple the costs associated with that filing because
right.
All they're going to do is wait. They're going to wait the 3 months or 60 days, and then 2 days before, it's a fire drill. So in the beginning, you have a very, very clear and concise conversation with your attorneys that you expect them to meet the deadlines. And that you're not interested in any extension of times that some other attorney may need. And that when you set court hearings, you want the first available, not starting 90, 120 days out, that you want to keep things moving. Because the longer you go, the more money they're going to charge you. They'll just find a way to charge you. The other thing that is interesting is getting the media involved, whether it's newspaper, television. You want to try and get your local papers or whatever, get involved. And I can tell you it is extremely difficult to get their interest because they've pared down. There's less reporters. What you want to do is you want to follow the reporters that are already doing work on this. But the media is huge in terms of taking as much as you can, whatever effort you can do to contact media. And every time one of us contacts the media, it makes it easier for the next person. You know, the fourth or fifth person that calls and has an issue, it's like, oh, finally, I'll go look at it, is keep the media involved and do whatever you can to get public attention to what this involves.
Right, Marty, and let me touch on something about the media that I have found out. When you do contact media source, call up one of the ones that have been active and ask them if they have an affiliate in your area. And sometimes they will refer you to someone in your area. And also keep your story short and don't only talk about your case. Give them less than a half a paragraph. Give them four sentences of what's going on because literally – they don't have time to read your stories. Neither does Faith. Neither does all those other organizations out there. So keep your bullet points short and sweet. That
right.
works so powerful.
Right. You give them a concise, a very concise two sentences or three sentences.
Same thing with legislators.
That tells this is what's going on. This is who all is affected. It can't be one family because it's too small
right.
of a story. It's too small of a sampling of constituents to move a legislator. But if you have a group of people that are being affected and you can concisely say, this is what's going on, this is how it's being done, this is why that's wrong, this is the heart of the story that is going to make that breaks my heart and will break others' heart hold. If you can do that,
right.
then you have a better chance of getting in the media.
Mention the movie I Care a Lot. Be short and sweet about it, though, and just say, what happens if this is your mother, period, and just let them think about
right.
it. Pull
and
on their heartstrings. Go ahead.
If I could just butt in quickly, and I love everything that you're saying, Marty, everything, you know, and just to touch on a few, we are not victims, we are crime victims, trying, you know, to get justice to prevent these crimes from happening to anyone else. I agree with, you know, trying to get a hearing ASAP because, you know, they put our loved ones in guardianship like a snap of the finger, right? One, two, three, they're in a plenary guardianship. But anything that we want to bring to the court, it's or if a guardian unbelievably does get arrested, it's kick the can. It's at a snail's pace. And finally, to touch on the media, I agree, short and sweet to the point, and it's not about you. It's happening to other people. And we're very lucky in Florida. We have quite a few. We have, of course, our two, you know, our rock star, our idol, Adam Walzer, and we also have Danielle Duras, who just got back from maternity leave. But find someone, because you keep calling, because you will find someone. It touches them. For whatever reason, they're close to their elderly grandparents, parents, but there's something that they get that they will do piece after piece about guardianship. So it's just being again and again continuous in requesting.
Perfect.
Great.
Same if you're trying to approach the legislature in your state, you go and you talk to legislators and you try to find the ones who have been affected in their family life, someone that they know, someone they are close to, because so many people have been beat up by these bullies that there's a good chance that they're going to know someone, and it might be someone close to them. And they might have gotten hurt too, and then there's a person who will say, "Look, I'm going to do whatever I can to help you with your situation,
right,
because I understand it from the inside."
Right, and we have that going on in Colorado. So good, that was good, Hillary. Thanks for joining in with us. That was excellent. And so Marty, so go ahead and keep talking, and we'll chime in again like we did. Building the advocate program that will take on court corruption and fraud. Now, we've all been talking about our cases, but it's so important to try to get as many families as you can, because this will show the corruption going on. Now in Colorado, I have over like 300 families, I'm saying, that have come to us literally. Some of them are so afraid they won't even give me their names. I mean, I had to literally talk to them. They're crying to me on the phone. I mean, that is so important, is to get the numbers up there in your area, because the news station will listen to people that have an organization. Start a Block Talk radio show. Start whatever you can, you know, to get the word out. And I agree with you, Marty, about that.
Yeah, so the Advocate Program is basically – is the how do we become islands becoming a continent, and how do we tie everything together so that we can work as a team. And so what that takes is an extreme level of effort and a select group of people to do the coordination and start building the foundations of information systems and referrals, references, and doing the legwork of organizing the all the parties, what their particular cases are, what their particular aspects are, who the parties are, who the attorneys are involved. And we are building, you know, basically we need to build a basic, you know, to make the analogy, the sports center factoids in the data. We're going to find numerous inconsistencies, numerous levels of fraud, numerous situations where there are conflicts of interest that you would not know unless there was a monitoring system behind it. The problem with that is that it takes money. And so one of the things that I'm going to spearhead with Luann and the group is a 501(c) or some type of donation program where we can get off the ground and develop the infrastructure for the data systems, for the referral programs, for the even the templates of what to do in this particular type of situation so that everyone is not starting at ground zero. And so over the next months, couple of months, we'll be working on organizing the program so that on a donation basis we can get people, you know, something maybe like the 9/11 or the Twin Towers program of $20 a month or something of that nature. And we expand it as far as we can because this is a national mm-hmm. corruption. This isn't only in Colorado. But what I have not seen, and I would be loved to, if you know or be pointed in the right direction, is I know that there's organizations out there that are very specific for what their interests are. My interests are basically creating data and helping with the data and how it all reacts with the other components. And basically being a facility for knowledge and references and tracking these criminals, if you will, who they're working with, who their co-conspirators are, so that we can build this network of who to talk to and who to avoid. Because that is that with my attorneys or as a pro se litigant, that is the most difficult thing to understand. You don't know who you can trust. And
exactly.
You think you can trust your attorney, but I can tell you all three of my attorneys screwed me. So their interest at the end of the day was to help the personal representative because they're going to have to work with the personal representative again in a week from now or a month from now. And they're going to have to sit in front of that judge. And they know that the judge and the personal representative have a special relationship. That's a financial relationship. That's a perk relationship. That's a ruling relationship. It's a fraudulent relationship. And
right.
So,
I get that. What people don't realize is that there are already teams of allegiances that have been built up for years in almost every courtroom in America where
decades.
You've got these, you know, decades,
yeah,
oftentimes decades, where people went to law school together or they've operated in the same clique in the legal community together, where they play golf together, where they, you know, when they go out as my family will join your family and we'll go have a nice dinner at a restaurant and go dancing, whatever it might be, they're already tuned in and turned on with each other. And then you hire one of those. Well, what you've done is you've triggered this insider system where you've already got a cabal, what amounts to a cabal of attorneys that work in unison. They don't really have to make the phone calls to say, hey, when this comes up in front of you in the court, you're going to rule my way, right? Wink, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. They don't have to make that call because they already know that in Judge So-and-so's corner, I've got this, you know, and it could even be things like, gee, I know that Judge So-and-so did this, so I can hold that against him, and the judge knows it, so he's going to rule in my favor because he doesn't want me to be letting out the truth about this, as we saw in the recent scandal with the Supreme Court. They didn't want particular truths coming out, so they're able to be manipulated by an employee that says, I want this really lucrative contract. Why don't you do that for me? And they go, yes, ma'am, we sure will, because
yeah.
we don't want or that's what is alleged. And so that's what's going on oftentimes. You'll hire an attorney, and it may seem that they have the qualifications, but what you've done is you've hired one of a team who has more loyalty to their team than they ever will to you.
Right.
And you don't know that because it's hidden. It's concealed from you.
And then
they pretend. They'll tell you, oh, I've got your back. And, of course, what they mean is, I've
got
your
back
pocket, and I'm picking it right now.
We're gonna
where
pick
your
it
wallet
right now.
Is.
And you also have but to be, Marty, and I want to say this before we get you back on here in a second, is that you really have to be careful of the attorney not only that, but sometimes you'll have a really good attorney, and then they will also be in the hot seat by these other attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And they will also try to get your good attorney, like, how many attorneys we've had on radio or so? At least 10 or so. And maybe 15 or 20 of them we know that have all been disbarred for representing their clients.
For aggressively representing their clients.
Right. It's sad. Go ahead, Marty.
Right. And so the system is like dealing with the mafia. And
yeah,
they'd rather get rid of someone than have to deal with, you know, at this point, dealing with the truth, because they can no longer deal with the truth because they all have too many skeletons in their closet. And so you're not fighting one, you're fighting the system. And so you have to be aware of that. And
right,
it's unfortunate.
The crime syndicate.
Right. And so what we're trying to do, and it will take years and it will take diligence, but it you know, it's like one of those things. You fail, I think it's the Gretzky quote, is you fail at all the shots that you'd never take. And we have to take shots, and we have to build these systems to track these criminals, and there'll be a tipping point. And what I've told the people, and I've told in the legislative meetings that I've testified in front of these judicial boards and whatever, is it's coming. And if there's mm-hmm. one thing that I will help in the next 5 to 10 years, is I hope to be part of any legal team or organization that has a $5 to $10 billion with a B dollar class action case against the state of Colorado for its fraud. And it starts today. It starts with everyone and knowing a little bit about the fraud in everyone's cases. And then we build it, and then we document it, we track it, and then we turn it over to the authorities. It's not going to happen in a year, but every time I tell someone associated with the state or this or that, every now and then you get the, well, why are you waiting so long? It's prime right now. And so who knows when it's going to happen. But the warriors, and there are warriors. If you're listening in this group tonight, there's a bunch of warriors in this group. And you have to be confident in what you're doing. You're going to make mistakes. You're not going to be perfect. But fill the form out anyways. You are going to have moments of paralysis where you think you have to be perfect because the attorneys are yelling at you or saying, you know, in my particular case, that I was assaulting them and that they feared for their safety. Very common trick of the attorney, especially if you're a male, is that they're going to say you're insulting them, that you're yelling at them, that they fear for their safety. And what, have a recorder with you in these particular moments, and so that you can show that they're lying and to the court. And that's the quickest way to shut them up. But you have to be a warrior in this aspect. You have to, you know, and I hate to get to the money side of it, is when we get that thing up and running, you have to help. If you're not taking on the courts and you're not taking on the system and doing this, your participation is to help people understand what we're trying to do, send them ways to contribute and this and that, and that's your contribution to this group, because we all need help and we can't do it alone. And it starts with one attorney, and then when we can hire 5 attorneys, and then we can hire 10 attorneys, and then we can hire and, you know, and do some really marketing and interesting things that I won't get into tonight, but there's some really cool things that we can do to make this much more interesting to the public. And so, but it all starts here. It's like going on a diet, is you make the decision to help, to be a part of the solution, not talking about the problem. And you're going to make mistakes, but make the mistakes, move on, and and you're going to be better for it. So the last thing I'll talk about is kind of the Attorney Regulatory Council, and is it committed to the public or the system? They're committed to themselves. And so they're typically never going to respond to you, even if you grieve one of them. But they are influential. And so one of the things that happened in my particular case is that I filed those reports, or I filed those grievances. So if your attorney is not conducting themselves in a way, and here's the quickest way to understand, if you want to know whether your attorney is doing their job or not, it's called the Attorney Professional Code of Conduct, or the Professional Code of Conduct. It's 170 pages. Read it. If you are involved in a probate case, read the 170 pages of the professional conduct, or the professional code of conduct. And it's what your lawyer has to do for you. And if you read that, you don't have to be a lawyer, but that's the rule book. Those are the rules. And get an understanding, because you will be questioning your attorney if you have a reasonable knowledge of what the rules are. Takes like 2 or 3 hours to read. It's a really good use of your time. And so with that, I'll just leave this with more on a psychological aspect of the journey that you're in, that you're halfway through, or you're at the end of, is that no one should have to do what we're doing to have our family resources. These people are criminals. And so you're going to have some good days, and you're going to have a lot of bad days, and you're going to have a lot of paralysis that you don't know what to do, and that's okay. But always pick yourself up, rub dirt on yourself, and lick your wounds, and move on, and keep continuous movement, because we all need your help, and whatever contributions that you can make. There are a select group of people that have, have taken this on at such a high level that over the next couple months, they're going to need more and more help. But it's for everyone. And it's for the people for the class action that have already been screwed by the system. And we're trying to stop the stuff that's on its way, that's currently being done now. So it's a big, arduous task. We need your help. We need your positivity, and, we want to be in a position when you're down that we can help. So in the next couple of months, we may be asking you for help, and you to spread the word, and you to tell your friends why this is important. And that's it. So I appreciate the time that you've offered me, and so happy to be a part of this program.
Fantastic information. And we will support you in any way, shape, or form. And it's true, we need to get people together. That's what part of the problem is. But positive talk, and with you 100%. And thank you so much for your knowledge.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to open up our phone lines, and we will take the first callers coming in. And to do that is the 845, call this number, 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962, you press a 1. And that's the number you call in every single week when you want to talk to any one of our guests, talk to anybody at Face Us, radio.
Or simply listening to the show.
You
push a 1 when you're ready to ask a question or make a comment.
You could.
But you can just dial 845-241-9962 and listen to the whole show if you want to.
And we also have links, too, that I post all over. We also just opened up a TikTok, and I'm not quite sure exactly how to do that yet. I'm still working with that. But I post on Facebook, TikTok. We're going to try to get our website back up. I'm working on all this. We're also working with Marty, so let's take in our first caller. Again, 845-241-9962. You press a 1. Let's bring in a 602 number. 602, you have a question, a comment? Talk to anybody here? Thanks. Hello?
You're
live.
Yes.
602.
That's you.
This is Linda in Phoenix. How are you?
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show. So nice for you to join us.
Hi. Thanks. Is Marty still on the line?
Yeah, Marty's still here.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for excellent review. I have had a long case in Colorado, and I guess you and I have something in common because my mom died on Valentine's Day, but that was 2017. So I'll give you a hug through the phone. I wanted to share a few things from a national standpoint because I actually had a hearing today in Florida in Collier County and coming back and forth between appeals courts. And I'm in appeals court back and forth between Boulder Trial Court. But I'd like to just share a few top-of-the-line comments to add on to what Marty has said and what your whole group in Colorado has been doing. First of all, I worked with my city of Tempe here, and we put on in June an elder abuse awareness financial exploitation program that got resounding results from people. And I included, and I would more than willing to share it with you, Luann, a 51-page document. I can give you the PDF, which we included articles on the guardianship and probate fraud. I have had so many comments coming back on that, but that's starting to make people's awareness, and I've had media comments. But I'm going to lead to the next question or the statement, because when I let that event off, I looked at the audience and I said, this is out of control, but we, the people, are what this country is about. Do not depend upon somebody else to fix this problem. Our country was based upon we the people leaving England, where they had a king that did not want to give up power. And they left so that we could have freedom. Now I'm going to share some things with you. First of all, does anybody know what is the maximum dollar amount that a judge has to make a decision when the case involves finances? I'm looking for a particular dollar amount. Does anybody know?
I do not.
$100.
I don't know.
Everybody write this down. This is very important because it's in the Constitution. $20. $20, and attorneys don't even know that. Start going through our Constitution, our Federalist Papers, and our Bill of Rights. Marty, I've heard you talk a lot about attorneys, but I will tell you very frankly, after 10 years, I don't trust any of them because I've also been reading a book, which I'd like to also share with you and tell you to go online to get it. It is called The Fraternity by a former Arizona Appeals Court Judge, John Molloy. And the very statement he has on page 283 clearly tells us what the problem is now. And that was written back in the previous century, but he was showing that our legal system, consisting of the judges and the attorneys, are all equal. They are all a fraternity, and they look out for one another. So if you reflect what's been going on in all the courtrooms and how they take cases, but all they care about is churning dollars and hours and dollars, this will start making sense to you. You can get that downloaded on a Kindle. The book is out of print, but keep checking online because I've been able to get used books for as little as $4. Sometimes they're higher, so just keep checking. That book you must read if you're serious about learning about the game behind the scenes. A couple of other things to know. Law school curriculums, we've checked to see who sets that up. It's the American Bar Association. They do not teach the Constitution. And everything that we have been putting, and we means pro se, me and a team of insiders working on this together that have been through court corruption, we are falling back on the Constitution. One is very important. It refers to as the Supremacy Clause, which states federal law is the law of the land.
And why this is important to know is because all your attorneys in Colorado or Florida or whatever state you're in, they're always going to argue state case law. You need in your court documents to get that supremacy law in the document. Because as I mentioned today in the hearing, I said over the 3 years I've had this case out of Florida, never has my supremacy law been questioned or any of the constitutional statements, the amendments, which I reiterated to the attorney and said, so I am confirming that you never challenged anything. So since you didn't challenge it, you obviously agree that we have a constitution and these are our rights. We are guaranteed under that Seventh Amendment that if there is anything over $20, we get a jury.
Mm-hmm.
Switch your focus to stop counting on attorneys and judges to do the right thing. No. You start letting people know. The average person would not want to go through what we're going through. So we are fighting for jury trials, and we're not letting go. Okay, that's something important to look at.
Right.
The other thing, when you're talking about wanting to get media coverage, here's what I challenge you to do, and you can do it statewide and national. But we've got a mess in the country right now. Take away the partisanship. Just look at the mess we have. 10 years ago when this all started, nobody believed what I was saying was happening. But now people are saying, my gosh, Linda, I can't believe what's happening in our country. Now I believe what you're telling me you've been through. The more you can summarize what's going on in your court cases to the national crisis in our crime stopping, in our unlawfulness, in our absolute decimation of our criminal, in our whole court system, the judicial system, the better we will be because we will get more attention. Focus it on the bigger national issue and say, this is just another huge problem that's exploding. I wrote a couple of other notes here. Let me just say, we have started using a term called weaponized legalism because that's what the courts are using against us as people to take our dollars. We have been so schooled to trust that the judges, the legal system, the attorneys are all going to be honest and fair, and we're finding out that's not true. And we've talked about a lot of the good attorneys that have tried to help us, and they either have to stop because they got to feed their family or they get disbarred. And it's because of this fraternity. So now the more I learn, the more I go, I don't want an attorney representing me because we can say things in court that attorneys can't. I asked the attorneys I was paying to demand a jury trial, and none of them would. So I did it on my own, and that's what we're fighting for. And we'll take it all the way up to federal court if we have to. The remedy
That's a really good point on that. The thing about what you're doing pro se versus hiring an attorney is that it is an extremely difficult process. I'm doing it myself. And one of the things for the viewers or the listeners tonight is that I have never received more information than I ever have as a pro se. I see it all. Your attorneys can't hide it because they have to show it to you. So that's one of the advantages. The disadvantage is that you have to be a high-functioning, very good reader, very good person, good writer to be a pro se litigant. And so it's not for everyone. And so know your capabilities. But if
Marty, you know, talking a team. I see that you have an engineering and business background. I've been to Golden. I hope you went and got a lot of Coors to drink to get through that school. But engineers are – I have an engineer on my team. Do not think I'm doing this by myself because I'm the media person. So I totally agree with you because I can't do all this. But that's what I want to let people know. The attorneys are not going to solve this for us. And we do need to build that group that you're talking about and the data and the messaging and how we communicate it. But if we think we are going to win this by going up against the attorneys, no, we're not. We are going to win this by going back to our Constitution, and we are going to take this back because we are the people.
There you go. Wow. That's pretty good. So I, you know, maybe I'll get you two to talk together on the radio and talk in person, because I think you two could learn a lot from each other.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'm always available to help, and I'm going to let you take some other callers because I think I hit the high points. But, Marty, love listening to you, and always love the Wednesday evenings here for your team. So thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
We will contact you and get you together.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Linda.
Great.
Let's move on to 914. Do you have a question or comment or just want to talk to
you? Area code 914, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I just want to say amen, brothers and sisters, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
You're welcome.
Well, I was fake and sweet. Yeah. Thank you.
You are just going to have short, but very, very sweet. Love it.
I know. Mm-hmm. we've got about 13 minutes left. Marty, is there any more things you want to add? And then tell you with the articles that have been coming out in Colorado, oh, my gosh, I can sit there and name you 20 to 30 articles that the press has done about our judicial system. I mean, every single day, every other day, there's another article in the Denver Post.
Which is an amazing and beautiful
thing. It's
amazing
and beautiful.
We, for many years, we felt like we were the only show in town. It was us, the dog and pony show, and we would go to all the judicial performance committee meetings. And it was, you know, as a matter of fact, the judicial performance committee did a tour of Colorado. Gosh, it's only been 3 or 4 years ago, it seems like.
Yeah.
And they,
we followed them to every single state.
And they went to all these different towns in Colorado.
And we were
and
right
we followed
there.
Them to 7 out of 10 where we could make it. And it was a very interesting journey, because they were talking about the about how what they're trying to do to hold the judiciary accountable and create accountability and transparency. And the people that were coming to those meetings were, we met 3 different attorneys that said, you have got to do something, because I can't function in these courtrooms. I'm trying to do the right thing for my client, and this is what's happening. The judge is blocking me. The other attacking me. The judge is permitting that. The judge is keeping me from filing. The judge is putting my cases at the bottom of the docket because I'm aggressively helping my clients instead of abusing them and taking their money like the predators do. And it was, you know, it was really an eye-opener. And the fact that that's going on was something that I think opened our eyes seemingly more than the Judicial Performance Commission.
Right, but now we've got everybody
kind of
listening.
Took it all in stride. And I think it had to do with the way that these that particular Judicial Performance Commission was sort of it's like they were gelded. They couldn't really do very much other than go and listen and try to placate people, and they didn't have any real power to do anything about the problems that they uncovered. And that's still the problem that we're seeing now.
Right.
Looks like we have another caller, 210 area code. You're on the air. Welcome to Face Us.
Thank you. Good evening. I am calling from San Antonio. This is Laura. I want
to let you know that
there is an ongoing lawsuit case. The law offices of Chris Pettit, P-E-T-T-I-T and Associates. He has been closed down. The former law office, or the former law attorney, Chris Pettit, has been forced shut down because he has judgments. He has been found to have stolen millions of dollars from clients' trusts. here in San Antonio and in the Texas area. On July the 6th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken on the date, he turned in his law license to the State Bar of Texas. He's a former elder law attorney. He stole millions of dollars from trust and investments. His brother committed suicide in June, and then in June, I believe it was June the 6th, there was disciplinary action against him. He turned in his license. He cannot, no longer, of course, work. He was ordered by the judge to live on like $150. He had claimed that he had $27.8 million in assets. And then after, he started selling stuff, and then he told the court, well, I have $115.2 million in liabilities. So, of course, there's a lot of stuff that he's hiding, concealing. The last thing we heard about the case was that the judge was very upset at one of the attorneys, because the attorney was not supposed to talk about the suicide of the attorney's brother in court. And, of course, it became public in all of the newspapers around here. This man stole so much money that he went out to an Orlando, Florida property, and he bought a $3.4 million home that was the same as the Disney World house.
Wow.
He had a huge million-dollar attractive house here in San Antonio, a couple of offices, et cetera. So long story short, now FBI is involved. And that is something that Marty was talking about, like law enforcement. Well, you know, here a lot of people say, well, yeah, you know, you go to FBI, you go to Texas Rangers, you go to the governor. I know I have. And long story short, no one cares, no one does anything. But the FBI is very, very interested in the case. The interesting thing that I found is that Conoco, Chris Pettit, the attorney, guess where he had an account? At Frost Bank. He had a trust account for years there. The Nolte funds had a Frost Bank account. Frost Bank is deep. I don't know. All I can tell you that the banks, when I wrote to Federal Reserve Bank and said, you know, Frost Bank is not in the up and up, on the up and up. Investigate. One of the other attorneys said, you're a smart cookie. And I think that's what he was talking about, that it was something that maybe I hit a button and they didn't like that information. Mm-hmm. But long story short, this is a big embezzlement. It's not chunk change. It's big. And it's happening today here in San Antonio. And almost every other day there's something on the news about this Chris Pettit. So you might, right. Everyone might want to look at it, follow it, and see what's going on, because it's the attorneys, the probate attorneys, and the judges are very upset, because they said, well, thanks a lot, Chris Pettit. Now it's going to make all of us look like a whole bunch of criminals and crooks.
Huh? Well, you know, but that's good in a way. Well, yeah. Not really good. But what I'm saying is that the media is getting it out there for them. So that is exactly the same thing going on out here in Colorado.
Well, that is it. You know, that's the thing. We know that similar cases are going on in Colorado right now under our noses. We've actually got a lot of evidence, although it may not be evidence that in certain cases it is strong enough to take to trial. It's a matter of actually making that happen. But in other cases, it's still in the accumulating evidence phases. And why in the world do we have to do that? Because there really is no one other than us that's taken responsibility enough to say, we're going to address this problem.
Right.
And but one of these days, the state of Colorado is going to face a multi-billion-dollar class action lawsuit that is coming together. And that's likely to be the future. And here you have a case in San Antonio that is...
could start one there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that you
absolutely
could
be
there. You could start
one of many dominoes going on.
And don't forget that the State Bar of Texas also, and I quote, false, dishonest, and deceitful, Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas politicized his ethics case. And
right.
There's a lot of stuff on Ken Paxton right now as well with the FBI. I know an attorney who is against Ken Paxton up in Austin, and he's been working that case for years against Ken Paxton, our attorney general. So there are well-respected attorneys and judges that are supposedly high-quality people, but not so much anymore. They're not perfect attorneys, and people are starting to see the jurisdiction is filled with corruption. And more, I've been going out lately, and I've been speaking to people, and it's really funny because here I am thinking that I'm going to educate people about the process, about they're actually knowledgeable. They're like, oh, no, we know. We know all about, Judge Kazin or Judge Rickoff. We know about the Texas State Bar. We know about the Court of Appeals. Well, then why are you all voting for them? I don't understand. So I concern them with that. I tell them, guys, we have to change the world. If you know that something is wrong, don't dismiss it. Get on a platform. Get on a media platform. Gather some intelligence. Take an opportunity. And so with that said, before I disconnect, I just want to let you know I am asking everyone to please, please, I don't know how to do it because I don't have a link. I don't have a Zoom link for it. I put it on my Facebook. There is a very important meeting coming up here locally in San Antonio on August the 17th, downtown on the west side, which we call like the Mexican-American, very Democrat, very leftist, type.
Oh, right.
And District 26 is having their Elder Abuse Awareness Seminar. And the one who is heading it is Democrat State Senator Jose Menendez, who works here in San Antonio closely with Judge Veronica Vasquez of Probate Court 2 and the Adult Protective Services and Cortez also of DFPS. The Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar will be there. Detective David Brinken will be there. Detective Simeon McNeil will be there. And the San Antonio Police Detectives from the Financial Crimes Unit will be there. So you know that the seminar is going to be a meet and greet to tell, oh, look at all the Democrats. We're doing such a good job protecting the elders. But what they are doing is they're hiding the truth about abusive guardianships. And this senator, State Senator Jose Menendez, came out on TV about a month ago with this judge, the same judge, and said that he is going to Austin, Texas, to pass some bills to close the loop on guardianships. Because he believes firmly that guardianships he believes firmly that people need to be put in guardianships, Luann.
That's not good.
So State Senator Jose Menendez needs to be ousted because a lot of people who voted for him now are turning their backs on him and saying this is BS. He's working way too closely with the probate courts. Why? Why? What is in it for him? And Senator Duda Zaffarini, who worked with Kerry Kasem a couple years ago and the others, blamed it all on Greg Abbott, our Republican attorney, our governor. And I'm looking at the big picture saying, we all are told it's not about Democrats, it's not about Republicans, it's not about white, black, or Mexican, American, or Chinese, or whatever. Everybody is in this whole, world of the guardianship. But I am looking at, the demographics.
I'm going to have to interrupt because only have about a minute or two left of the show.
Okay.
And you can go back in next week and finish what you were saying.
Yes,
I just
definitely.
One message. There's another big thing going on out in California. Venus just contacted me and said that they have a lot of stuff going on with the Attorney General, a lot of stuff going on in California. If you have a probate case, get a hold of Faceless Radio. We're at facelessradio@hotmail.com. I can give her the information, but get your stories to her as soon as possible about your probate case. A lot is going on out there. And, Marty, we want to get back to you right now as you are our guest tonight. What do you want to say to everybody out there
in closing?
Well, I want to thank you again for the opportunity to speak with the group. Stay positive. This is really, really hard, and you're fighting the system, and you will lose more than you will win. But when you come back to the fold and we as a group can work together, we will make progress. So I want to try and end it on a positive note. And it's really good practice for the other things that you're going to face in life. And you are going to become a better person. And I think that's what this is all about, is we really truly want to help the people that are being hurt. And there are a lot of people that can't do what we're doing today, and they need our help. And so be strong, be honest, be effective, be happy. But this is a long fight, and stick to it. And I appreciate it.
Take yourself, my friends. Yeah. And Hillary, do you have a closing thought?
Well, yes, I do. And, you know, we have to keep in mind that we are doing this not only for our families and the people that have died as wards of whatever state, but also the people that are living as we speak, isolated, alone, wondering what happened to their family in fraudulent guardianships. And there are quite a few of them that have written letters that have been sent to the court by whoever, and there's quite a few of them that we've got to get out. So with this as a group, I feel that we can do it. And what a great show. Thank you so much.
Well, that ends our radio show. We had a few more callers that called in. I'm sorry we can't take your call. Our Blog Talk Radio says it's time we have to leave. but call into our show next week. And the phone number you do that with is 845-241-9962. You have been listening to Faceless Radio. And you may share the link to friends and family, and can be found on Faces Radio on Hidden Truth Revealed channel on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, all shows are recorded and archived. You may follow us on Facebook, Families Against Fraud, Embezzlement, Unethical Standards Faces, and on Hidden Truth Revealed. You will be notified when our shows are going to air. And you can reach radio at hotmail.com. And make sure you hit the follow button on Hidden Truth Revealed to get the notice that our show is coming back on, okay?
So, thank you all for listening. Remember, justice requires transparency and accountability, and never quit.
Right. So we're going to take a night, and we'll give us a closing thought or whatever you want to say, Robin. Good night, everybody.
America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the cover.